Of oysters, clams, and cockles. Listen, this feels like an assholes podcast, and my thing from the first meeting was that it shouldn't feel like an assholes podcast.
Well, Ross, that's fine because you're about to be reborn into the world of Barrett Dudley.
Dude, too much birthday at the best timing ever for you. Happy birthday!
Oh,
late birthday.
Thank you. Yeah, I did not have too much birthday.
Did you see this coming?
I had just enough birthday.
Did you see this coming though? That the main show in your life right now would be a birthday episode lined up with your birthday.
Do you know what I did? I literally didn't even think about that until you just said it right this second on this very podcast.
No shit.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
It hit me pretty immediately that it was your birthday.
Yeah.
Because just in general, I would say.
Yeah.
This was one of the more difficult watches in terms of, my own personal mental health state and then that of the show. And it was depressing is what I mean. It was a depressing episode because you have to watch Kendall get just crushed.
It's funny that you say that because it's obviously very, very dark, but it was also, I mean, wickedly funny.
It was.
As John Travolta might say, wickedly funny.
Wickedly funny.
I was laughing out loud. It was one of many episodes where it's like after the 14th time where I tried to like bookmark a line in my head to like talk about on the show, God damn it. I need to be taking notes for this because it was so rapid fire. It was so funny. And much like you talked about last week about how the episode kind of like took you out of any succession funk that you may have been in and like fully brought you over to like the, yes, these people know what they're doing. They are smarter than you. They are better than you. And the show is in, you know, the best hands that exist on television right now. That's what this episode did for me. And I don't want to take anything away from the rest of the season because it's all been building to moments like this, but man, this show is just so good when it puts everybody together in one insane place like this. Like if you weren't thinking about the Bachelor Party episode while you watch this one, then you know I you need to go rewatch the Bachelor Party episode. But like
same vibes,
similar vibes, and it was just so well crafted. It really like got our characters under a microscope. And you know, just like we talked about last week, like we got the episode where it was like, hey, we're doing serious politics right now. We're going to do serious politics. And then it bounced back out and like went deep on some real big character building and character drama. And it was just like, it was fantastic. And I mean, you're not wrong. There are some very, very depressing scenes in this episode. But it was also just, I mean, meticulously put together and so, so funny. And just like, I think the last episode and I think this one are both Pantheon Succession episodes at the moment.
I agree.
Man.
I have like, to agree with you. This makes two in a row for me too.
Yeah. I don't even know where to start, man. I'll ask you a question. Let me ask you a question. Can I ask you a question? Have you ever thought about like what you'd want a birthday party for yourself to look like in this type of way? Have you ever kind of fantasized about what your perfect party celebrating yourself would look and feel like?
Right. Like, everybody has that. When you and I were young, there was, like, the Sweet 16 thing on MTV where everybody has their sort of ultimate birthday party, right? Like, if you had an unlimited budget, what would your birthday party be?
Yeah.
And I mean, a little bit. I mean, mainly that it would be, like, you know, obviously either some type of mansion setting or insanely fancy hotel setting, and then a limited amount of guests and some type of A-list performance and, like, stuff like that. But in a pretty limited way. Like, at no point past, I don't know, 15, did I ever think about this again, though? Like,
yeah.
I haven't hit my midlife crisis yet where I'm going to try to throw, you know, I'm 34, so I'm...
We're
getting there, and it's honestly, it's one of the reasons this episode was so depressing, because, listen, man, I'm 34 and divorced, okay? And I've done drugs. I don't do them anymore, but that's not the point.
We're just a few years away from getting up on stage and just going full nut, man. You know?
I know. I'm scared of that. And I'm scared of, like, it's just hard to watch when, you know, the whole thing was this guy striking out repeatedly, and now it doesn't even seem he's got any type of focus on the company, which let's go there.
I just wanted to finish the thought about the parties, because it's like, I asked the question because I don't expect that everybody has thought about a party for themselves. And I don't even necessarily mean like something where you're thinking about what you'd do if you had $1 million to spend on a party, or in the case of this one, several million. Even just like what somebody's ideal celebration for themselves in their own world would be. And that's because, like you said, a lot of people kind of drop that off at after their
teenage
years or whatever. But I think if you check some certain boxes, like I know I certainly do, like I'm extroverted. I love being out and social. And I'm also probably a little bit like narcissistical, selfish, and egocentric. And like, those are things that add up to like, to letting yourself drift and kind of dream in about, you know, about your perfect night that kind of has you, if not at the center, at least like playing a crucial role. And so
if you were directing a movie and you got to make yourself the star.
Right. And so this one was, I think, maybe extra fun for me because like you get into the mind of Kendall, who is, as it's casually mentioned here, essentially worth $2 billion, right? Like, this dude is...
That's what his stake in the company is worth.
Insanely rich, right?
$2 billion.
And it's just all so cringe-inducing, right? And you led with the line that was one of many amazing ones where he said, this party feels like it's for an asshole. That was my number one thing, and I didn't want the party to feel like a party for an asshole. And that's all just like, you know,
that's almost the point.
In general, it's very hard to pull this off, the party for yourself,
right?
Without coming off like an asshole. And so it's really like trying to reconcile the desire to have parties like that, or to have any party like that, while also, you know, not being a dick.
Right.
It's really funny to think about.
The conundrum is that only an asshole would throw a party for themselves.
Throw a party for themselves, especially one like
especially
this.
At that level, right?
But then, his
siblings point out, though, he's got no fucking friends there, man. It's all business associates and sycophants and people he's paid and druggies.
Who's not here, huh? Your mom, your dad, your wife, your kids, any real friends? Dude, I laughed out loud at that line. That was
it's like
so
a hired
funny.
Movie set, though. It's like, you know, just so he can walk around and be the guy.
Man. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Anyways, just cut. So when he is rehearsing for this Billy Joel crucifixion performance that he's going to do.
Yeah.
And he's got like one satin souvenir style jacket on. Right. And it's like his rehearsal bomber jacket.
Right.
And then at the party, he has a different one on. That's like basically the same, but in a different color. It's just like such small touches. Like, he cared so fucking much about how he came off at this party. And that's the death knell. The other thing that I just want to drop in here that has nothing to do with the episode is that as much as you plan and prepare and orchestrate everybody knows that the best parties are the ones that just kind of like happen organically. And you know, that's a sliding scale, right? If you're super rich, then maybe the things that happen organically are way crazier and more wild. But like, you know, having a compliment tunnel to tell people that they're full of grace is not the way that all banger all the time parties typically go down. So
look, you know, it's kind of like going viral on the internet. You can't force it, right? You can't force this. You're either that guy or you're not. And Kendall's not. And anybody that would come up with the idea of a compliment trail or whatever that was is a complete lunatic, right? Like, I think at this point, the question with him becomes like, just how fucking crazy is this cat? Because, I mean, what we see in the present room is next to a full-scale, like, depressive meltdown.
Yeah, you're just jumping straight into the most depressing thing of all, huh?
I mean, let's keep that to the side for a second, because one of the things I don't want to forget. That I'm more likely to forget
is that they
kind of like, okay, Roman is in the room with Logan, and he's about to head out. And Logan's like, hey, since you're going, you know, take this envelope, deliver it to him. Mm-hmm. And Roman's like, is it a good thing? You know, I'm Roman. I'm going to do some Roman-y stuff. And then Roman gives it to him. And one of the things I couldn't figure is like, so Roman clearly knew what it was. Mm-hmm. I was kind of almost under the impression he wasn't going to open it or look at it or know what it was or have talked with his dad. But because of the way his dad gave it to him, like, hey, just give this to him. He didn't say what it was or explain. Right. But then Roman knows all this information and is like, is basically, he's the guy now. Like, he's the guy Logan is working with to try to buy out Kendall. So they offer to buy him out of his shares in the company for, as you said, $2 billion.
Yeah.
And that is another one of the saddest moments in the episode, because the note just says, cash out and fuck off. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's from his dad. So it's like, you know, it's a pretty devastating message to receive from your brother on behalf of your whole family, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Cash out and fuck off. And I mean, on in a series of events that kind of levels the only shell of confidence he has left, right? It is one of the more devastating blows you see dealt to Kendall this episode, where, I mean, nothing goes correctly. He doesn't even end up doing the crucifixion performance. He's going to sing Honesty Hanging from the Cross. And then he's like, I mean, this is too much, right? Like, you know, I don't think I could do it. And then I love them having the event coordinator go, well, that's a relief.
No, that was also just a perfect moment. I mean, to like, God, the show is just so well written. I'll try to stop, you know, just exclaiming about that. But yeah, to have them there being like, we're ready. You're going to do it, right? Like, let's go put the harness on. Do you want to get changed? They are getting paid is what they're doing. They are following his lead, and they will change with the winds as quickly as he does. And it's like, it was such a great reveal that none of them thought this was a good idea. This was a stupid idea all the way. And they are very thankful and relieved that he is not going to go through with this abomination of a performance.
What would have been the worst,
right?
The worst part of the whole thing, right? He was going to get up there and say, this is a culmination of my life's journey being crucified to save you fucking morons.
But that's not what they're there. They're not there to actually guide him and put him in positions to succeed. They're just there to get paid.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty clear cut. I mean, look, Barrett, if somebody is offering you hundreds of thousands of dollars and presumably way overpaying for your services for the most extravagant party.
You got to float that business, man.
That's certainly an aspect of business in Manhattan, I have to imagine, is that there's event services and party planning services that do the most upscale version of what you could possibly imagine a party would be, right?
Well, a lot of those people talking to him were his like current PR and spin team.
Right, that's true.
I think they had already employed for other purposes. Yeah, I think that they had. Yeah, they clearly were executing on all of the party ideas as well, though. But yeah, I mean, they just watched him fire the best lawyer in Manhattan, right? For disagreeing with him, essentially.
Yeah, telling him to get his shit together. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're not going to tell him that something's a bad idea. They're with him all the way. Like, they're going to ride until the checks stop. So.
Exactly. And in the case of being employed by somebody like Kendall, it's hard not to understand. And all, just the chick who plays whoever Greg is trying to ask out does mm-hmm. such a good job of kind of skating that line where she's like, yeah, I don't really know. I'm like, look, I'm super young. This guy's giving me a lot of money. I'm just trying to do what he says. Like, this is all ridiculous. Like, I'm aware, but also I'm not aware. And is this normal? And like, what the fuck? I thought she did such a good job of kind of skirting that line of like, look, there's this thing that happens to a lot of young people when they go out and when they move to New York City in particular, and we've seen it in some of these documentaries about companies that end up being totally horseshit, like WeWork, where you can be sort of sold on this version of the dream that's even more like insane than possible. And that's kind of what that chick represented for me, is like these Greg-aged, you know, young professionals who get swept up in this crazy corporate lifestyle of like success and social media basically at this point.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of it's just a whirlwind from there. And you see the like Greg is such a different type of douchebag, right? Like he's Greg is not your typical young professional douche. He's so weird that he's like a whole nother breed of animal.
Yeah. You know what? I thought it was kind of it was kind of tongue-in-cheek irony. I thought that like they had Kendall and Tom telling Greg that this chick was out of his league just because Nicholas Braun is like widely considered the most eligible bachelor in all of New York City at the moment. Like he is like the hottest man on the planet, especially when it comes to those living in and around Manhattan.
Okay.
So it was just kind of funny to like, it was almost like a wink, wink, like, LOL, you know, Greg the Egg is kind of a half-wit loser. But like in real life, Nicholas Braun can probably have any single chick that he wants under, you know.
Well, he's like 6'8" for one. Yeah. I mean, yeah. They always try to make fun of his height, but he's like clearly a very substantial man.
Yes.
And
not
then
a bad thing.
He's as good looking or better looking than both of the people who insult him. So
yes.
That's the thing that's like ironic about it, right? And
in
the case of Tom, he eventually gets to the point that he has, you know, what does he say? An oak tree for a cock, and he fucks like a. I don't even remember.
Maybe a red sequoia.
And yeah, a red sequoia for a dong, and that he plows like a bullet train.
And he fucks like a bullet train.
He fucks like a bullet train, yeah. so that explains Tom. Well, but we know the real reason, which is that Shiv grabbed herself a little puppet man.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
she could fill this role, which is thrown in her face in this episode as well. But yeah, that was a great little tongue-in-cheek moment between those guys. Like, and I love when Tom gets the word that nobody's going to prison, goes into Greg's office,
flips the
asks
desk.
Him to scoot over, and then flips the desk, and just goes full. And I mean, man, we've watched him, Tom, just get his shit packed proverbially, like the whole season, just getting ready for prison. He's on the prison blogs.
He's on the prison blogs.
Learning how to make prison food and learning about the toilet, and he's got prison consultants, former guys that are now out of the can, ex-cons, like coaching him.
Yeah,
it's like that Will Ferrell
toilet's
movie.
Your best friend.
It's that Will Ferrell movie that he and Kevin Hart did about prison.
Get Hard.
Pretty sure that's just politically incorrect on every level now. but Get Hard. It was really named that. Wow.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that movie came out like in 2017 as well. Not that
really
long
wasn't
ago.
That long ago.
No.
Really wasn't. But we've watched him just, I mean, basically have to shut down, right? Like he's had to shut down and almost disassociate to survive.
Yeah.
And then in this moment, he's given all of his freedom back. And I mean, it's such an odd one because I'm obvious preemptive celebration red flag going up here for me, man. Like,
sure. Yeah.
Yo. The old senile old man who went piss mad 2 episodes ago. That's the guy's word you're going off of. This is all going to be okay now. Jerry and him are telling you you're not going to prison. So you believe them. Why would you believe them?
I mean, it's less about believing them, right? And more so just the fact that
there's a chance.
Yeah, there's a chance. They're all sitting around there with the champagne, of course, but they're also saying this.
Long
we're not
road.
Really celebrating. Yeah, long road. We're not celebrating, but you know, cheers. so yeah, there's but absolutely there that felt a little premature.
Yeah,
but at the same time, I think was such a great, you know, if you didn't already understand how much that this was weighing on on Tom. And just, my God, like, I know people were saying it after the last episode and the previous one about how Matthew McFadden is just like, you know, seems like a shoe-in for an award, but like...
He does.
God, he has been on fire this season. Yeah. And it did not stop in this episode. Like, he's just such... And everybody is, but he's such a nuanced performer. And when he and he's had such a meaty, you know, piece to chew this season with the weight of, like, knowing that he's going to prison and dealing with this, you know, sham marriage and, like, basically, like, what his worth is, what his value is, like, how he... continues, like, everything that you know that is going on in that man's brain, and he's just been so incredible.
Yeah, you're not kidding. He has been the guy, in my opinion, one of the performances, anyway, one of the main performances that has elevated this season and taken it to this place where now you and I are going from the first couple episodes, we're concerned, we don't really know, are they going to be able to swing a third season of this if they keep going with the same stuff, and now... 7 episodes in, we're sitting here confidently telling you, yep, they can. And he's one of the reasons, man. His character development this season and his acting, his performance has been very, very, very good. I tell you, this happens in great TV shows. You will watch incredible actors like you and I are watching The Sopranos on Patreon. Mm-hmm. James Gandolfini is widely considered to be one of the greats, right?
Yep.
The impact he has on everybody around him, it's a Michael Jordan situation. You make right. The whole team better. You watch Steve Sciarrippa, who plays Bobby Bacala, grow from literally a rookie to like a seasoned veteran by the end of the series because he's working with Gandolfini day in, day out. And I think that working with dude who plays Kendall... Jeremy Strong has rubbed off on him, and he's gotten to a deeper level this season where... Man, he made you feel that shit, dude. He really, really did. I felt the relief that he had, it was just a beautiful performance.
Yeah. You know, speaking of kind of the concerns that we had early, it feels like a good kind of segue into talking about like what's happening with not only Kendall but obviously Roman and Shiv as well, right? And Roman is like has been making all the right moves. Shiv has been making some right moves, some wrong moves, but not getting credit for any of it, and is very, very much feels like she is on the outs at the moment. And I just thought that, like, you know, the scenes toward the end where Roman is like now clearly super wasted, probably high on stuff, and Kendall has had his meltdown looking for the package. Shiv has danced it out like Elaine Bennis, you know, at the discotheque, and like they're all just
little kicks.
They all have 3 a.m. party face going on, basically, where it's just, you know, like, you know, your body
has
used
gone. Yeah.
Your body has used every endorphin at that point, right? You're running on fumes, and it's like the threads are coming undone, and it kind of reminded me that, like, yeah, even though the situation is sort of the same, we really haven't seen, you know, the 5-CD disc changer flipped upside down like this, right? Like, you know, Kendall, as you mentioned, is essentially being asked to leave the family, to leave the business.
Right.
To take his money and fuck off. Like, irrevocable change. Shiv, who's always kind of, who we've always kind of thought is kind of the golden child, the most likely, the smartest in the room, the one who's had real job experience, the one who, and she's always carried herself like that too, right?
You know, I mean, she at least had a chance, bro. I don't know how much like real job experience she just got plugged in politically, but she was not a moron or a pervert, which was helpful, or a murderer.
She expects to be taken seriously. She always thinks that at the very least that she's the most professional, and
she carries herself well. Yeah,
she carries herself well. And now it's just all being completely shoved to the side. And Roman, who two, three episodes ago was showing the most like humanity, the most pathos, the most, you know, just like real personness, has been making moves that are pleasing his dad. And it's like you can see that it's just that armor is being put on him and he is getting more and more, you know, jaded and demonic and like nihilistic and all of the the kind of bad qualities that we don't really want any of these kids to like have on permanently. Because
right.
even though they're all awful in their own ways, we still kind of, the show makes you sort of secretly root for them.
Yeah, I mean, it at the same time, it's showing you, like, you know, with him and the thing that he's being given is power.
Yeah.
And it immediately corrupts him. Immediately. Like, he makes a couple correct moves, and he's literally calling his dad and leaving him the voicemail. Oh, I got it done. You don't need the other two. You can kill the other two because I'm your best kid. Love you so much, daddy. Bye, or whatever. And it's like, bro, that's fucking weird, son. Like,
yeah, man, that power teat, he's gotten some taste, Barrett. And he is drunk on it. Absolutely.
And you're not wrong when you say it was like he made a move. Finally something worked for him, right? He pleased his dad. And then he got a little taste. Oh, shit. And then we've seen him hustling a little. And here's one of the knocks I'll make on this show that I'll still make on this show. When he goes and hustles on our boy...
Lucas Mattson,
who I'm like, that's a combination of two names from Dark...
Shouts to Alexander Skarsgård, because I've already gotten privacy, pussy, and pasta tatted on my back.
Yeah. Okay. Look, I didn't in the same way that forgive me, Barrett, but remind me, who is the recent cameo from an A-list actor we had?
Adrian Brody.
In the same way that I was disappointed by Adrian Brody's ability to put some spice on his character,
uh-huh.
I was thoroughly impressed by this particular Skarsgård's ability to spice up what it was like, you know, young billionaire douchebag
uh-huh.
who's built like the streaming platform, and like now this old head media company is trying to buy him, and he's just like, fuck the whole world, man.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
once you're a billionaire, if you're under 40, I don't know if you know this, but you have to go full nihilist where like nothing matters and you hate everything. You grow a long beard. You only wear all black like designer, and that's it. This guy is like the most fun version of that possible. And because he's kind of a sicko, right?
Mm-hmm.
He wants
mm-hmm.
to take a piss, literal piss, on the phone. And the knock I'll make before we get to the fun scene is that when these guys are tossing around business jargon,
mm-hmm.
when they go have the meetings, the only ones we ever see anyway, there's no level of detail to this. He'll be like, so, we can do this? And the other guy will be like, I don't think so, man. I really want your dad to die. And he'll be like, yeah, but we can make this work, right? And the other guy's like, I fucking hate you and your family, bro. I really wish you'd stop talking to me. And then by the end of it, somehow Roman has won because he asked the guy to take a piss on his cell phone?
So, okay, I'm really glad that you brought this up because I had a similar thought, especially when this particular conversation was happening. Because at some point after they start getting a little bit more comfortable with each other, Roman says something like, he's like, man, I'm fucking good at this, right?
He says, I might be the best fucking businessman in America.
I might be
like
the best fucking businessman in America. And I think that I agree that the details often seem a little too vague.
And important to leave out?
And yeah, but at the same time, I do feel like it's purposefully telling us something. One, that like, doing deals isn't all that hard of work because like the people that are dealing with that level of detail is like the 37 lawyers that are
yep.
employed by the corporation.
Yes.
And that second, like, so it's literally just a matter of being in the room. That he's good at it because he was given the opportunity to be good at it, and he got the opportunity because he's the son of Logan Roy.
Right.
And there's like almost no other qualifying factors to like, quote unquote, do deals, right?
Right.
Because there is a level to it where it is just like making a connection with somebody and saying, okay, let's do this. You down? Do you want to make money together? I'll help you get what you want. You help me get what I want. You don't like my dad? He is my dad. So I have the ability to potentially take care of it. And that's that. And then they wipe their hands with it and it goes off to the
You're
management
right.
consultants and lawyers and you know, pencil pushers that do all the actual, like, you know, physical manual work.
And it's probably more fun to watch this generalized
totally.
Socialization version of it, socializing version of it than the... I think you're right, man. I think you're right here, too. That is, when you're dealing with high-level executives and high-powered CEOs, in particular when you get into the level that these people are at, where you're talking about billionaires and multi-billionaires many times over, those conversations are just not the kind of conversations that regular people are going to understand. And we don't have any, it's like, it is a different world. And there is a certain level of generalizing when you're hashing out a deal, because you're exactly right. Then the detail does go to the lawyers. And like, whatever you say there, it's almost like it can be used against you situation. Like
right.
the less you can actually put on the table, the less sure. can be used against you later. So you watch them all, they do the dance, right? Where it's like, they just throw these barbs at each other. And obviously the biggest one we get is Skarsgård's character going, Lucas Mattsson going, let's like cut to the chase. When is your dad going to die? And Roman, who has very, very clearly been a daddy's boy this whole time, but more than ever right now, as he's like, literally, like, I am a little concerned he might try to like have some type of sexual relationship with his father at some point if somebody doesn't stop thinking his weird incest jokes are so funny. This family is bizarre with what they're okay with joking about. But, and I say that coming from a family that's bizarre about what they're okay with joking about. Like, these people are on another level, and it's fucking weird. But when he levels him with that, like, when's your dad going to die? I thought the whole thing was going to fall apart. I thought he was going to be like, you know what, man? Fuck you. We're going to come for you and murder you and your family and, like, take your company from you or whatever, full Logan Roy. But he sort of, like, takes the hit, and I get the feeling it won't be forgotten, though. Like, you know what I mean? The Roman isn't the type of dude to let that go. That this guy just asked him directly, when is your dad going to die? Or we really will find out just about how much of this is about power to Roman mm-hmm. versus family and legacy and you know, responsibility to your family or whatever. Like, we're going to find out. And I think we start to see by the end of the episode, as you told us, when the threads start to come undone, right? Toward the 3 a.m., 4 a.m. time of the night, he's throwing his brother on the ground.
Pushes his brother on the ground. He's making, like, super sexist and misogynistic off-color remarks in regards to Shiv and her position as a woman. You know, he got together at Man Club or whatever it is. We just saw him essentially, like, kind of going full fascist with Mankin, the potential presidential candidate.
Yeah.
So he's really just, yeah, he's definitely, he's making that turn towards
Roman, full Roman. Full Logan, rather.
Full Logan, full bore, just like nothing matters. I'll do whatever
it takes. Yeah,
whatever it takes to put me where I want to be.
Do you remember the other week where Jerry said they've got the president, they've got the raisin on the phone? Okay, and she's like, yep. "We need somebody to talk to him. If anybody in this room is how did she put it? Like a little Logan clone? It's Roman." Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I was kind of in that moment. I was kind of like, you sure about that there, Jerry?
Yeah, no, I thought the same. Yeah.
Jerry, you sure about that there? I don't know. We've seen Roman do much. And then by this episode, it's either that she saw something we hadn't yet, or I think more likely that her putting him, kind of enabling him like that, like being like, you're the one, like you've got this almost, has given him some motivation to go and do all the fatherly dick sucking that we've watched the past few episodes.
Yeah, I think just to, and to continue on your thought of that, of how much that the idea of his father dying, especially as put so bluntly by Lucas Mattsson, how much that's weighing on Roman. I definitely envision in one of these next two episodes, because we've pushed Roman so far in this direction now, that I do think that he's going to be met with some type of decision. And I think that's A, something that has to do with Jerry, because bringing her up is great, because that's, you know, over the last season and a half, that's been his, like, his tether.
That was his play. That was his whole play.
Well, and he likes Jerry. He has real emotional connection and feeling for Jerry, more so than he seems to have with Shiv or Kendall, for example.
Anyone that's not his dad.
Or for his father. But even it's more emotional than whatever he... The thing with his father is he's just trying to...
Sick and twisted, right?
He's trying to get love from his father. He's trying to get respect and noticed... And just simple attention, right? He just wants his father to love him. He actually has some type of emotional connection with Jerry.
You're right.
So I could see that popping back up, or something where that, like, he'll be in that Kendall position where it's like, well, how much do you want the power? Do you want it bad enough that you're willing to sabotage your father for it? right? Or I could see that idea of his father being pushed out or dying or something coming up. And you know, is he able to go all the way in the pursuit of being at the top?
Yeah, and I think what he's shown so far is no. Like when push comes to shove, and the thing that's easy to forget now is that the only kid who really stepped up and made the moves when it was necessary was Kendall. At least if you're talking about getting rid of this old toxic old man who's
right.
I mean, the other concern here is obviously that he drives down the value of the company or the brands or the overall public sentiment toward their family down so much that the next person doesn't even really have a chance, right? So there's this whole thing up in the air that they've all waffled back and forth on, and Kendall's the only one that's ever gone full bore with it and said, fuck him, I want to take him down, I want to go yep. all the way, I want to, you know, cooperate with the government to remove him, basically. On the other hand, we've seen, you know, Roman find some footing, Shiv completely slip, and now the relationship between Shiv and Roman completely severed in this relationship. Yeah. As he's basically been like, you thought it was you, and it was me. Fuck you for thinking it was you. Suck my balls. Like, that's his message to his sister.
Yes.
And, by the way, it really pissed me off the security guards let Roman in. You're telling me Kendall spent all that money, and you can't keep the damn dude out that he says to keep out?
Yeah.
They're fired, Barrett. Not. Those guys are fired. We're not hiring them next time.
I thought about that, too, but, like, what are they? Are they going to, like, you know, manhandle his brother?
Yeah, his brother's worth at least $2 billion too, right?
Yeah, probably. So it's like you can't just beat the shit out of this dude and toss him out. Like,
no, he's Roman Roy.
So he's right. So it's if Kendall wanted them not to go in there, he needed to stay there the whole time, basically.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I guess at the end of the day, when he yells out like, "Oh, this guy's groping the guests," it's like, do you want to be accused of Roman Roy of like sexually assaulting him at his brother's birthday party? And the answer is no. You let him into the stupid treehouse.
Yeah, stupid treehouse.
Because it's a treehouse, and this is a 40-year-old man's birthday party, which you entered through his mother's vagina.
Dude,
which...
please tell me that you noticed that when you walked into the party, there was the notorious Ken, ready to die on the exterior.
I did not notice it until the after the episode thing. Then they showed it again, and I was like, oh my God, that's incredible.
Dude. Everything about the party. God, let's just name the stuff at the party real quick.
Okay,
right?
Yeah.
There's the tunnel of compliments or whatever. You're so full of grace. there is there's the fire room where it just looks like you're in hell, basically.
Yes.
There is the the future room. Probably my favorite part, with all of the news stories about his siblings and family, how he predicts it will all end.
The future Roy news.
Brother
stories.
Dies in tragic jerk off accident. dude, that
I
was
thought that was one of the best scenes on the show too, because it was so awkward. Like, Connor's genuinely upset. By the way, he tore his rotator cuff, and they wrote this whole wing into
I
the
saw
episode.
That, yeah, Connor elected president. Parentheses of shitting your bag.
but then he gets into the specifics of like how he did shit in a bag.
I thought that
was a metaphor for anyway,
some inside family joke went about Connor shitting himself, I guess. I don't know, that was so funny to me, man.
Dude, that whole scene was epic and so funny and so well done, and just like an almost Meet the Parents style awkward, where Ken is like, he's like, yeah, you like that? All right, I fucking hate all of you. You fucking hate me too, right? Okay, yeah, best birthday ever. Fucking love it. All right, sweet. And Barrett, man, you touched on something else earlier that's super important, I think. We've talked a lot about like how much are drugs playing a part in these people's lives? Like, because it's almost an American Psycho-y type of vibe where it's like they don't show you every drug that's getting done, right? Like,
right,
you're
going
to have
right.
to put the pieces together.
Definitely not in this episode. Because
we don't get to see
were...
any, really.
Well, I mean, we get the mention in the compliment tunnel.
That's what I'm
actually.
Bringing up, yeah. When Greg tells him he's had a bunch of cocaine,
yep.
or he's had cocaine tonight, and he says it very casually in like the way that someone who does cocaine a lot would say it. I mean, I think it's heavily implied at this point that all of these people are using pretty heavily. Like, the way that Shiv unloads on the dance floor and the way that she's just like sort of spiraling and the way that Tom obviously has been coping with the prison stuff. And then, man, what did you make of, like, his post-prison anxiety release meltdown.
Yeah.
It was the only thing holding him up, is my take. Like, that was obviously a focus shifter from his broken marriage, corporate situation, life, so that he could look at this prison thing, this next step, this next project or challenge. And once that's removed, there's nothing to fill the void.
Yeah, I do think that as obviously terrified of that as he was finding value in
purpose,
it,
right?
And purpose, yeah. And you know, we got all the references from Roman here, and in one of the closing party scenes, right, where he starts badgering Shiv about, you know, you don't seem too excited that your husband's not going to be in prison for a year. Like, you just, you know, you seem bummed out by that. And so I think that all of that points to no prison sentence looming, forcing both of them probably to kind of turn inwards and focus on, like, this larger issue at hand, which is that, what is this thing and where is it going?
And what is yeah, it, what the hell is next?
Especially for Tom, right? So
yeah, we'd seen him try to find some purpose in trying to get her pregnant, right? And then she's not ready for it yet. She's kept in the anti-contraceptive or whatever the fuck word is. And he was obviously very disappointed. He's like, you can only throw so much cake batter at a brick wall. We've gotten all these, you know, basically efforts by him to see, you know, is there any real spark to this relationship with this woman? Or am I just going to be sort of this Ken doll that she's using? Yeah. And if so, then the prison thing was a great move for him, Barrett, because it secured a place for him within Logan's circle of trust forever. And there is a very important line that Logan delivers right after the whole thing gets brought up, and Tom almost has the disappointment already, and Logan walks by him and he says, I won't forget.
Right.
Or I'll remember what you did. And I got to say, I felt like that was part of his victory celebration at first, was almost like, all right, I pulled this off. I volunteered to go to prison, and then I don't have to go, but I get the credit.
Right.
The dice roll worked, but then we see it backfire, where by the birthday party, he's so depressed and sad about his situation and the reality of his wife was stoked. And I think he felt it. And and I don't think Roman was wrong. He straight out called. He's like, you were looking at the 100 dicks you were going to bang while he was locked in the can or whatever.
Right.
And I mean, she looked like guilty as hell. You know, she looked guilty as hell. And Tom, I think, felt that shit, and it just, he's got nothing going right now, because now what? And that's where, let's end our succession conversation with this question for you, and then I'll jump in. What do you think happens from here? So we've seen the snowball building, we're 7 episodes deep, we've only got a couple left. What are you seeing, writing on the wall wise?
Yeah, I'm still waiting for a big shoe to drop. That's what I'm looking for in the last 2 episodes as far as the movement of the plot. And I'm still, you know, after reading a little bit further, I'm still unclear. It's actually possible that Kendall's lawyers and the DOJ do have the files that were supposed to be so incriminating.
Right. And that they're not as incriminating as they originally were.
And that they're not as incriminating as they originally thought that they were. Or they're just being drowned by so much noise coming from Waystar Royko. So I don't even know if the Greg shoe is actually there to drop or not. So, but we did see, you know, after Kendall gets that information last episode, that the case isn't looking so great at the moment. He then goes and tries to get Tom, who basically says, like, nah, I'm gonna go with the guy that always wins, not the guy that always loses. This episode certainly felt like it might be pushing Shiv over to the side of Kendall.
I agree.
And so that's where, you know, they were obviously pushing us in that direction, which maybe means it's not the one where they're going to go. But I don't think this show is generally trying to, like, pull one over on the audience.
Right. Especially in the case that this is a built up moment.
Yeah. And yes. And so and right, who was the closest to aligning with Ken from the get-go, at the very beginning, the one that seemed like she was maybe thinking about it,
was Shiv.
Was Shiv. So, So it's definitely possible that something like that happens.
Well, once they're out, right, it's like, why not team up? And it seems like, you know, her dad has all but said cash out and fuck off to her, too, in so many words. I mean, she gets him this deal done, and he says, well, that's not what I would have done, and you're not getting the board seat, basically, like... Right. That's that. Now she's being told point blank, your input on who's the next president doesn't matter, and you're also not going to be the next head of this company.
Yeah, yeah. For her, the to paraphrase, it would be more like get in and shut up.
Right.
Like you're part of this, but also your opinion is not valued.
Right. And so she has to never accept that.
And you're never going to be given the opportunity to do anything meaningful. Like you're just your optics, essentially.
Right. And I mean, it's tough to know because we've seen her try to break away from this family. Right. Shiv was the one who, when Connor and I guess Connor was sort of a, you know, uninvolved doofus. But when Roman and Kendall were in there working for Daddy and trying to hustle their way up the corporate ladder or whatever version of that their connected asses were doing. She was out working in politics, right?
Right.
Like, she actually went out into the world and seemed like almost the, like, to take it back to The Sopranos, like the Meadow Soprano of the squad, like the one that wanted to break away from this situation and this family and get out and live a healthy, normal life. And then she ends up breaking. She comes home to Daddy, and now Daddy doesn't love her the way she thought Daddy did, or Daddy's not all there anymore, or both. And also he might be a little bit of a perv, and there's just a lot for her to not like. All right. Yep. And for all of Kendall's jokes about his, you know, his Jesus Christ like nature and the crucifixion thing. And I mean, look, he didn't pick it. He blew it. So that it was a forced hand, but he is the righteous child out of the three or four, however many there are, probably more. And that'll be season four, but he is the righteous child, and he's the one who, as he put it to Shiv so frankly earlier in this season, he said, I'm you and you're me. And if you look at her now,
she's
going to agree.
That has been a continuing theme through this season, is that with Kendall gone, Shiv has taken that spot, not as top child, but as, you know, scapegoat. Punching bag.
Shit kid, yeah.
Right. Like, you know, the one that's kind of being neglected or,
I mean,
you know, just
it's
overlooked.
Sexist thing, too. And they
totally,
they directly point to the fact that, you know, Logan is a sexist. And
yes,
he does not, and him and his crew of old white dudes in power do not like women rising up the ranks. And they're not trying to ruffle any feathers by installing a liberal female as the CEO of their right-leaning billion-dollar media corporation. So, multi-billion dollars. So, from a storyline standpoint, it makes a lot of sense that Logan eventually turns away from Shiv. And this again, it's like it's in hindsight sort of obvious that he was always just using her, and even he point blank tells her in his half senile state. Basically, I'm just like you said, get in and shut up. Like, you're not here to, it's optics. Yes, it's optics. You're here for optics. We want the look of you.
You know, you talking about the misogyny, the sexism, the potential perviness of Logan, any misdeeds that he was guilty of with the whole Cruise scandal, all of that. Just one other thing that they've just floated out there has been this what is her name, Carrie, his assistant that he's clearly having an affair with.
His new relationship.
And is 50 years younger than him. That's the female voice that he listens to, right? So it's and last season he was having that, whatever that little weird thing was with Holly Hunter's character.
Right.
And he was giving her the time of day. So it's just something else to, you know, watch floating out there is whatever is going on with Carrie, because that's a new character that it hasn't been given a ton to do, except for that she is this new 50 years younger than Logan is fling that he's having.
Yeah, we don't know where her interests lie.
Right.
We have no clue. But you're right. I always drew on it as like when it started with the Pierce family's, whatever that chick was.
Rhea.
I thought it was a draw on like how he was slipping mentally. Mm-hmm. And he needed a female. He'd always had this woman, like, you know, he had a Marsha or his wife before her to bounce things off of, and that's kind of one of the, that's like the way he operates, and that with, you know, as he gets older, it's basically a very easily fillable spot because he's slipping, as I said. That's the nicest way I can put it. So this chick has found an inn through his pants, it seems, according to Roman, seems quite confident, and he seems to pay quite a bit of attention to his dad's penis. You're right. This is a huge kind of red herring they've slipped in here. Like, we've got all these obvious things going on, like Greg and his grandpa and the government also, and Tom and Kendall, and who's going to flip and who's going to be the rat, and will Kendall even make it to the finale, like, to see, because I thought he was going to jump off this building at one point in this episode. Like, there's all this huge, huge bombshell building of anxieties and issues and obvious momentum toward the apex of the season, but then now, just out of nowhere, this chick, and I don't know what to make of that. It's going to be, because the kids don't seem to be paying as much of attention as, like,
well, they're talking about it, but they don't, you know, they don't, I don't think that they
realize the potential.
Well,
it seems large, the potential. She's like speaking up in meetings and shit.
Exactly, and
it's, I don't know, it's going to be, I can't believe, I just couldn't believe they threw another thing in there. I was like, do we need more conflict right now? Come on. But yeah, overall, like, this episode was a furthering of what we talked about last week for me, that the show can handle itself regardless of circumstances with Logan. And I think they've, since our complaints and since I said I think his health issues looming will be a big piece of this eventually, they have given us enough to where I'm like, all right, this feels normal again. And, you know, enough concern and real health issues, and now this guy directly saying, when's your dad going to die? That has all made it feel more on par with where it should be for me.
And I thought that the conflict between the kids in this episode was, you know, it was just mined really well.
It was like, more realistic, yeah.
And it found some kind of nooks and crannies that, like, I don't think had really been totally explored yet, and so that's why it felt really, really good to me as well.
Yeah, further level of detail within these brotherly, sisterly little relationships in the Roy family.
Also, tell me Kendall has not been watching a little bit of The Office. Jeremy Strong watching a little bit of The Office, picking up some Michael Scott cues.
I think it's just a similar setup, character. Right? It's total lack of self-awareness. That's the character.
It's my birthday. Fuck you.
Like, it's a total lack of self-awareness. And that's what Michael Scott always embodies, right? He's so not self-aware that it's endearing. But in the moments where life gets really real, those characters are, man, they're tough to watch. And yeah, so when he ends up in the from the beginning of the episode, it's my birthday, fuck you, to the whole city off his penthouse balcony.
God, that was so Michael Scott.
To the end of the episode where he's stomping around his present room looking for the one present. I mean, like, man, this is another question I have. Like, what's with his ex-wife? Why is she there being so supportive but also seemingly knows just how terrible he is?
Yeah. I think there's a thing with, like, adults, and especially rich ones, where, like, I'm not really going to be able to put a button on this the way I want to be able to articulate it, but it made sense to me that she would be there. Like, if you're divorced but you had kids with your, you know, with your spouse, and you're, you know, you've got some custody arranged, right? So you're still dealing with this person in your life, and, like, things aren't so venomous that you, like, can't be in the same room with each other,
right?
And that person throws themselves a $5 million birthday party,
you would expect them to be invited.
You have to go make an appearance at that birthday party.
I'll give you an example.
You have to see it. You got to see what your jackass ex-spouse is doing. I'll give you a real world example.
So my ex-wife, I'll give you a double-layered real-world example. My ex-wife's parents were divorced, and when one of their parents passed, the other was invited to the funeral. Mm-hmm. And it's an example of, like, when you've built so much of a life with somebody, there's a certain point, a percentage point, right? And especially when you share multiple children like Kendall and this woman do, and I'm assuming her financial future is tied somewhat to him as well.
Yeah.
Then you're going to have a level of relationship there. And it's I guess I'm shocked she handles it as well as she does and that she's still showing up for shit like this.
I think I agree with your first point for sure. The fact that but I think it relates to what you just said is that her financial future is probably connected to
I would think
his
so.
in some way, shape, or form, right? So I'm sure she's very well set after the divorce, but at the same time, it's like, you know, you just referenced a good example. It's like there's still a tie there.
Yeah, well, the father of your children turns
just
40.
The kid. Yeah,
you go to the party,
and then you got to go see what this nut is doing here with is, and like maybe he's going to get on stage
and do Billy Joel
L to the OG again, or maybe he's going to get on stage and do Billy Joel while he's attached to a cross. So you know,
you just never know. No, you're not.
You
you're not wrong. That's why she's there. But I'll give you more realistically. I was like, I can't believe she would let him set up shop in her apartment. But then I do think that takes us back to this argument that. I think there's an implication that she has obviously with sharing their two children a financial interest in what Kendall does and in his life and just how derailed he is and shit like that too, which she can pick up on when she goes to these events. And by the end of this one, she sees, like, by the end of their little conversation, she sees like, okay, yeah, I made the right decision. This guy's full batshit crazy. which I mean, to his other female partner, what like the girlfriend? What's your read on her? The one that he's dating that's in the present room with him, that at one point she seemed like she was almost about to be like, you know what? Screw this loser. I'm out. And then she's all the way there for him. Like,
I'm just trying to get in your head, figuring out why you would give me this gift.
Yeah.
I already have a watch.
Yeah. Why would you think you could pick out a watch for me? Like, you know, you can't pick out a watch for me. How could you pick out a watch for me? I'm me. And I have a watch. Like, this is some shitty watch, or like, did we get a brand read on that? Did you know what watch that was? I didn't think
no,
so.
No, but I'm sure that it was worth $40,000. You know what I mean? Like,
but I almost took the implication as like she bought him a couple $1,000 watch and he was like, I have a watch worth like 70 of this watch.
I think that he was so distraught about not being able to find the gift from his kids.
That it didn't
matter. Something which he says was something that they made for him.
Right.
That any idea of being gifted some material object in that moment when, like, this whole party is about materialism and he's kind of, like, reckoning with the fact that the only thing that matters to him in this moment is, like, this one thing that his kids made for him.
Well, because he's already asked his siblings, did you even come to see me?
Yeah.
Like, did you even come to see me at all?
So I think it's just like the inherent kind of meaninglessness of the watch that is kind of is ruining him like that.
You nailed it. He can buy a watch.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I think that Naomi, I don't have a good read. I think that she is probably good for Kendall in a way, but also is kind of a distraction from all of the demons that he's wrestling with.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
She's the only positive thing in his life at this point.
She
can relate. She's from the Pierce family. She's the Pierce family fuck-up. And she knows what they brush up against in this episode and what almost the overlying theme is. You cannot buy happiness. You cannot buy happiness. Money does not lead to happiness. And
that's right.
There is no version of this world where you can accumulate enough money to buy yourself feelings. That is not a thing. That's why he desperately asked his brother and sister to give him one. Give me a feeling. Tell me you came here to actually see me, that it matters, that it's not just business, that it's not just bullshit, that it's not just money, that it's real. And they can't even do it. His brother's throwing him on the ground. It's all bullshit. It's all... If once you have enough money to where you can buy anything you want, it's the ultimate conundrum.
Right.
Well, then what's the point of anything? How do you find purpose and work in daily life? And this guy's like pretty much abandoned his family, blew his marriage up. He's a drug addict. He's committed murder. He's lost favor with his father. I mean, it's fucking over. Like he's cashed all the chips that he had. And now he's left with, I mean, he can't even, do you think there even was a present from his kids, bro?
Yes.
Okay. So you think that was a legit story? He's just like, well, it'll be logged. It'll be logged then. Like, well, certainly if you gave it to somebody, it'll be logged. And then he can't find it. But I think it's just because he's so high and drunk at that point that he can't find it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because she's pretty specific. She's like, there's like llama wrapping paper or something.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Anyway, the whole thing, man, just a mess of a watch. And I'm looking forward to next week and seeing how they close out, how much they choose to bite off.
Officially confirmed, 2 more episodes, so there will be 9 total. So we only have 2 more weeks, man.
So penultimate next week, and then the finale the following week. Can't wait. Can't wait to see how much they choose to bite off in this particular season versus holding for next year. That's always one of the big things toward the end of these seasons when you get past the first season of a series, right? Another great episode of Succession and one that I really enjoyed discussing. By the way, I referenced a couple times that Barrett and I are watching The Sopranos on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. We're biting off an episode every single week and doing a podcast about that episode, a companion podcast about that episode of The Sopranos that is friendly to both first-time watchers and repeat viewers. So if you want to watch The Sopranos, one of the greatest television shows ever made, one of the greatest stories ever told, Barrett, some have said, compared to the Bible, often, by great scholars, The Sopranos.
Wow.
We're doing a companion podcast for you right there on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. Come through, pay a minimum pledge of $5 a month to support the podcast, and in exchange, you can enjoy The Sopranos, HBO's classic crime drama, with us on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. Barrett, I'll hold the rest of my stuff for next week, but I do want to say,
yeah, man,
I got deep into the great.
How far did you get?
I think I'm 4.
Oh wow. Okay, I've only watched the first one. I've been distracted by other stuff, so I'm definitely gonna watch one tonight though.
This was one sitting. It was one session. I had a
wow.
Look, it was one of those things when you're sick, you know, you yes. gotta get something out of it. So I crushed a lot of a show.
And, very good.
And I missed it,
good
man.
On you, sir.
I'm really happy to be back.
Huzzah.
I've enjoyed it. Huzzah, huzzah. If you haven't started The Great Season 2 or you've never watched The Great on Hulu, it's definitely something that Barrett and I will be touching on as we work our way through Season 2. It was one of our favorite shows from, was that 2020?
Yes, it was.
I think so, yeah, from last year. Fucking pandemic. The Great Season 2 is on Hulu as well. Barrett and I will be back next week to discuss that. I'm going to try to get into Curb's newest season soon, working my way through the backlog with the girlfriend, but she's blown through, Barrett, get this, 8 seasons of Curb.
That's very impressive. How many episodes of Curb would you say you're watching, like, per night, basically?
A minimum of 2, but weekends have been like, I mean, there was like 7 in there at one point, you know, like 7 episodes in a row. So at some point I'll get to the newest Curb, but until then, The Great... Any other movies we watch, we'll talk about here. Follow Barrett everywhere at Barrett Dudley. Follow me at WR Bolin. We are at Oysters Clams Cockles on TikTok. We have a TikTok and also Instagram at Oysters Clams Cockles, and a little bit different on Twitter where we are at Clams and Cockles. Appreciate y'all. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back with another helping next week. And until then, we'll be on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles with another episode of The Sopranos this Thursday. Adios, muchachos.